Way to Blessedness is the fifth in the series, Living the Bhagavad Gita Way by Swami Suryadevananda. Dedicated to Gurudev Swami Shivananda. This series is based on the translation and arrangement of verses in the book Gita Meditations by Swami Shivananda, published by the Divine Life Society, Rishikesh, India. This series is a study of a better way of living based on the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. I am grateful to the Divine Life Society for their permission to use Gita Meditations by Swami Shivananda, whose translation and flow we will follow. Prayer is the foundation and pivot of spiritual life. When you pray, you must feel your relationship with God. It is from there that you will relate or commune. For most, the relationship will evolve as you evolve spiritually. Let us start our daily sessions with some prayers.
O adorable Lord of mercy and love, salutations and prostrations unto Thee. Thou art omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. Thou art Satchidananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, absolute. Thou art the indweller of all beings. Grant us an understanding heart, equal vision, balanced mind, faith, devotion, and wisdom. Grant us inner spiritual strength to resist temptation and to control the mind. Free us from egoism, lust, greed, hatred, and anger. Fill our hearts with divine virtues. Let us behold Thee in all these names and forms. Let us serve Thee in all these names and forms. Let us ever remember Thee. Let us ever sing Thy glories. Let Thy name be ever on our lips. Let us abide in Thee forever and ever. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim Dvandvatitam Gaganasadrisham Tattvamasya Dilakshim Ekam Nityam Vimalamachalam Sarvadi Sakshibhutam Bhavatitam Trigunaraitam Sadgurum Tam Namami. I prostrate to the Sadguru, the Brahman, who is bliss, who is the giver of supreme happiness, who is absolute knowledge, who is beyond the pair of opposites, who is vast like the ether, who is attained through assertions like Tattvamasi, who is one, eternal, and changeless, the witness of the mind, who transcends all changes and modifications, who is devoid of the three modes of Prakriti.
Vasudevam sutam devam kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat gurum.
I salute Lord Krishna, the world teacher, the son of Vasudeva, the destroyer of Kamsa and Chanur, the supreme bliss of Devaki.
Om Tat Sat Purushottamam Samgaram Shantam Vyat Sannibham Maya Titam Khanda Bodha Paramananda Atmaratnakaram Vishwasite Yudhyantam Ekritam Tridaiva Bhantam Vibham Satyam Jnanam Anantakoti Nihir Jyoti Swarupam Bhaje.
I take refuge in that one immortal Purushottama, who is known as Om Tat Sat, who is the Guru of all, who is peaceful and all-pervading like ether, who transcends Maya, who is the ocean of the indivisible consciousness and the supreme bliss of the Self, who is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the universe.
who, the one Lord, appears as though he is threefold, who is truth, knowledge, and massive effulgence, like endless crores of suns put together.
Sarvo Upanishado Gavo Dugda Gopala Nandana Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdam Gita Amritam Mahate.
All the Upanishads are the cows. The milker is Krishna, the cowherd boy. Arjuna is the calf. Men of purified intellect are the drinkers. The milk is the great nectar of the Gita.
Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karvavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Om. May he protect us both, teacher and pupil. May he cause us both to enjoy the bliss of mukti. May we both exert to find out the true meaning of the scriptures. May our studies be fruitful. May we never quarrel with each other. Om peace, om peace, om peace.
Today, we continue from where we left off the last time with the verses on sadhana or spiritual practice, and focus on the wider field of direction and values in purposeful living. As you know, today, more than ever, we are in a rush to prepare ourselves and our children for life by teaching them all that they need to know and giving them all that they need to have. But towards what end is all this rush? Here, in this last section, the Gita tells us about the true nature of the body and the world, so we don't rush to a finish line that isn't there. Knowing the true nature of all things, the Gita tells us what is worth striving for, and a way to blessedness that is not opposed to healthy living. There is a better way to live, but it has to start and stay on a different footing, so no matter how things are in the world, we are moving solidly in a direction that is indeed for our highest good. Our topics today are: body and world are evanescent, aspire for the supreme alone, thought at death, jnana or supreme wisdom, and way to peace. In 2.5 verses, the Gita tells us the secret of life and death and points to a higher attainment. For certain is death for the born, and certain is birth for the dead. Therefore, over this inevitable thou shouldst not grieve. The enjoyments that are born of contacts are only wombs of pain, for they have a beginning and an end, O Arjuna. The wise do not rejoice in them. Having obtained this impermanent and misery-ridden world, do thou worship me. Death is the portal of change, and since all that is born must die, death's door ever evolves. Days come to an end and years pass by. Youth flows into old age and old age meets death. This is not some high-sounding philosophy for contemplation in the twilight years by the fireplace, but a fact of life. If one leads an awakened life, one will be keenly aware of the hands of time and its play on change. The awakened person knows the value of each moment and the daunting task on hand. He wastes no time, delays not, and does not grieve over the inevitable. Intent on the ideal set, he treads expertly. Now in this first verse that we've just covered, that certain is death for the born and certain is birth for the dead, there are meanings at different levels. Everything that comes into being or takes shape or appears before us is bound to change. But the second half of the verse is also important and easily overlooked. Certain is birth for the dead, that if we are dead to wisdom, the cycle of rebirth will perpetuate itself continually. And the only way out of it is to lead this awakened life, to find a better way of living, a better footing, and to tread on the path of blessedness. In the second verse, we covered the three kinds of sukha or pain, which we have covered earlier just a little bit when we talk about all enjoyments that are born of contacts are wounds of pain, for they have a beginning and an end. Two things contact each other at one time, and whenever there is time process bringing things together, there is also time process which takes things apart. If something comes together in time, it must go apart in time. If our happiness is associated with things that originate by contact or originate in time, when the time for discontact happens, we are going to face bereavement. There is nothing very complicated about it. So how do we live with all this? In the second half of that last verse, which is from the 9th chapter, the 33rd verse, and only this second half is important, is that when we find ourselves in this condition of impermanency in samsara, it's called a misery-ridden world because it does not deliver what it seems to promise. Do thou worship me? And this is something that we want to get to on what this worship is. The worship that is alluded to here is not a worship that is referred to as a ritual, but a wholehearted adoration of heart and mind and love, and to seek the permanent through the impermanent, to seek the enduring through the changing. And if we do that, we would aspire for the Supreme through all of the appearances, through all of the changing. This doesn't mean that we turn our back from the changing. It means that we aspire for something through this. The goal lifts a little bit higher and everything else becomes a meme. So it all fits in. The Gita tells us nothing else is worthwhile. Nothing else will satisfy. Everything else is in the process of change. All other roads go deeper into the forest of change, and this forest is guarded by the centennial of death. We now move on to the second topic for today. Aspire for the Supreme alone. And this flows right from where we stopped earlier on what should guide our way of living. The Gita tells us how our faith can be made steady and the results of different attitudes and effort. Those who long for success in action in this world sacrifice to or worship the gods, because success is quickly attained by men through such action. Whatsoever any devotee desires to worship with faith, that faith of his I make firm and unflinching. Verily, the reward that accrues to men of small intelligence is finite. The worshippers of the gods go to them, but my devotees come to me. Friends, these three verses flow very nicely together, even though they are from different chapters in the scripture. Firstly, you can pray and worship the presiding deities for some ends, and this is an easy attainment. Now, when we talk about gods, we are talking about the presiding deity or the presiding power, and it need not be limited to celestials or devatas, when you worship money, a head of a corporation or somebody that has made it may become your ideal, and that may become your God, because he or she is seen as a presiding power, a role model, or a template of the success that you seek. So it's not just devas or celestials, but whosoever or whatsoever presides over or holds sway over the small success that we seek. So when we do that, whether it be to the celestials or any form of power, any form of attainment, that is easy. And those successes can be had. And Krishna tells us that those who long for them, focus towards them, orient towards them, gravitate towards them, because that type of success is quickly attained. And then we come to a very, very important verse. But whatsoever form any devotee desires to worship with faith, that faith of his I make firm. So whatever faith we have is going to be made firm by God. For instance, if we have faith that money, success, power, and what we call quality of life is the thing, then that is made strong and everything else is made feeble. And this is why sometimes it's very, very difficult for people with wealth and affluence or people that gravitate towards material success to have any sort of meaningful or deep spiritual life, because they already have another God. Whether they may accept it, whether they may doubt it, whether they may go to the temple or church or synagogue 100 times a day is of no consequence. What is of consequence is what they put or enshrine in their heart as really or ultimately worthwhile. So when you put something as ultimately worthwhile or really worthwhile, you have faith in that. And God makes that faith steady. So it's a double-edged sword. Be careful about what you have faith in. And this is why we are cautioned to aspire for the Supreme alone, to have faith in God alone. Because when that is strengthened, we will keep navigating through life, finding a better way to be and a better way to live, because we have a higher ideal that guides us. Not only will we attain success in things while we are living, but we will move towards the goal for which we are here. There are some that are overly suspicious and seem to have a way of dissecting everything and finding things wrong with us. And we are given in the same verse a hint of caution, that that faith or belief in suspicion, in this thing is wrong, is also made strong and continuously strong until we probably cannot stand it anymore, because suspicion dwells in us. And when you are suspicious about everything and everyone, you cannot have peace. Now this doesn't mean that you be overly credulous, but what this means is there is no reason for suspicion, because you are perfectly capable of assessing each situation as it happens without the use of memory from the past or creating new memories for the future. We can do this from moment to moment as we live and be free of thought or conditioning. And lastly, we are told over here, the reward that accrues to men of small intelligence is finite. This small intelligence is a small way of looking at things. Small successes are seen by a small mind. Small little things to have are seen by a small mind. So the worshippers of the gods go to them. Those who worship small little things, little money, little things, power, and things like that, go to them, move towards them. But my devotees come to me. And ultimately, we are not going to take any of that behind. All of that is going to end, not just at death, but it's going to end in life. Because death is not something that happens just physically to us. Death is the face of change, and change is the nature of all things and all people in this life. So when we pursue that which is in the process of change, we pursue death. And when we pursue death, there is great sorrow and there is great suffering. We have already heard, or just heard, that my devotees come to me. Let us continue. I am easily attainable by that ever steadfast yogi who constantly and daily remembers me, not thinking of anything else, O Partha. Having attained me, these great souls do not again take birth in this world, which is impermanent and the place of pain. They have reached the highest perfection. All the worlds, including the world of the Creator, are subject to return, remanifestation, O Arjuna. But he who reaches me, O son of Kunti, has no rebirth. There are three or four important things that are told us in this first verse we have covered here. Easily attainable by that steadfast yogi. Krishna's way of talking, or the Bhagavad Gita's way of talking, is very clear. Not only are we told about the truth, but we are also told in the same sentence almost about how to attain it. The Gita, as I mentioned before, is a scripture that is verified and verifiable. This is the hallmark of scriptures like the Gita, the Upanishads, the Brahma Sutras, and the Yoga Vashishtha. Nothing is told to you as some kind of doctrine, or that you must believe in it because it's some kind of promise. Whatever is said, and then you are encouraged to validate it on your own. And it is said that every person can validate this, and that is not a privy of one special class of people. So easily attainable by that steadfast yogi. Now bring to mind, friends, we have talked about steadfast yogi when we have discussed Sthita Prajna under saints and mahatmas earlier. Who constantly and daily remembers me. That's the number two thing. Number two qualification, and number two means. And number three, not thinking of anything else. So in number one, we have talked about ever steadfast yogi. Not just remembering God when we need something or need help. Steadfast is remembering that God is the goal, the world with all conditions, including work and family, are the means. And that is how you constantly and daily remember Him. Is you have Him as the goal, God in all, God as all, this truth of my own nature must be realized. When this truth is embedded in your heart, you will not think of anything else. Other things will appear in front of you, but you know very clearly in your heart and in your mind that He alone indwells all. You may not have had the experiences yet, but you will be in pursuit, and that's all that matters. Say you're driving from Bradenton, which is south of Tampa, to Tampa. As long as you see the signs on I-75 that you are going north towards Tampa, you may not have reached Tampa. There are several towns and cities in between. But you know that you're traveling in the right direction. You're traveling north, and this road goes to Tampa. And so therefore, there is no fear, no confusion about what you are doing, where you are going. Having attained me, these souls do not take birth again in this world. Again, we are told very clearly that attaining the Supreme, which is non-different from attaining your own nature, because the Supreme is not just up there or out there, it is in all, as all, and therefore the truth of our own nature, that this is the only passport or way out of the cycle of rebirth. Do not again take birth in this world. And we are told again, impermanent and place of pain, because they have reached the highest perfection. So Krishna is trying to place before us that this is the goal, the highest perfection, and everything else is the means. And if we bring about this focus, our life will be blessed. And finally he concludes that all the worlds, including the world of the Creator, Brahma, are subject to return or re-manifestation. In other words, all other attainments go in a big loop and bring you back to right where you are, if not lower. Only the movement towards the truth of things, God-realization, self-realization, discovery of your own nature, these are the only paths out of this cycle.
The knowers of the three Veda, the drinkers of the Soma, purified of all sins, worshipping me by sacrifices, pray for the way to heaven. They reach the holy world of the Lord of Gods and enjoy in heaven the divine pleasure of all the gods. They, having enjoyed the vast heaven, enter the worlds of the mortals when their merit is exhausted, thus abiding in the injunctions of the three Veda and desiring objects of desires, they attain to the state of going and returning. The worshippers of the gods go to them. To the ancestors go the ancestor worshippers. To the deities who preside over the elements go their worshippers. But my devotees come to me. All these verses tie in very beautifully with one another and what we have just spoken. And when we talk about the knowers of the three Veda, we are not just talking about the three Vedic scriptures, but Veda in terms of all learning. So those that go through other means of study and things and sacrifices, striving to find a way to heaven, a realm of the celestials, they reach that world eventually, and they enjoy the divine pleasure of the gods. But there is a word of caution that is not mentioned, that is indicated but not mentioned clearly. When you enjoy the divine pleasures or pleasures that are not found in the earth, and you come back to earth, you are never happy. If you have been a millionaire and you lose all your fortune and you're back to being a pauper, you're going to be most unhappy. Not just because of the condition you're in, but you're going to have remembrances of the condition that you were in. And that is going to make you extremely miserable. Now, death does wipe out certain things, but the impressions generated from enjoyment of those divine pleasures stay within the subtle mind. And when those come back, and those are not to be had out here, our condition would be intensely miserable. There are some people that come on the path, and you have spiritual samskara, spiritual impressions. You try to nourish them. And at the same time, you're surprised to find out that there are other things, a desire to experience, or a desire for pleasure, or a desire for nice things. And one cannot seem to understand why these two exist in oneself at the same time. Well, these verses throw a little bit of light in them, because they say, having enjoyed the vast heaven, they come back when their merit is exhausted, therefore abiding in the injunctions of the scriptures. And they come into the cycle of going and returning. This going and returning is necessary to thin down some of the cravings that are attained by the pleasures that were reached. See, my friends, when we taste pleasure, it is very, very hard to come off it. We get hooked on it. And you and me both know that. For instance, if you have a taste for something and you go to that restaurant all the time, and say you go to that restaurant one day and it's closed. It's supposed to be open, but it's closed. Maybe the owner had an emergency, he had to go somewhere. It's a little restaurant. You're disappointed.
How could they be closed? Why are they closed? I came all the way here. Whenever there is a craving and it's not able to be satisfied, there is frustration. Frustration leads to anger. Anger clouds your mind and intellect, and that is a downward spiral. So you have to be careful about pleasures and things of that kind when you come on the spiritual path. And people are urged to lead a simple life, because the more you taste, it all augments earlier pleasures that are already existent that cannot be satisfied. When you go on the path spiritual and you have all these hidden vasanas or tendencies that cannot be satisfied for whatever reason, there is tremendous anger. And one cannot understand how these diametrically opposite tendencies of the spiritual, for the good, for God, and also desires for pleasure, for experience, for nice things, for other conditions, or certain thoughts, how do these exist in my mind at the same time? Therefore, we are told to have focus. Once again, when Krishna says, the worshippers of the gods go to them. In other words, whatever is most important to you, that faith is made unflinching by God. So be careful about assigning your priorities in life. Your priorities in life cannot be anything that is changing, because when it changes, there will be bereavement. What is the difficulty in understanding this? It's very clear. If I find pleasure in something or happiness in something that changes, when change happens, and it must and it will, I will be bereaved. What is the difficulty in this? So we are told very clearly, my devotees come to me. Again, the devotee is not just from that we should forget about the world, abandon our family, abandon everything, and devotee means sitting in one place and doing some religious practice. It's not like that. Devotee means to be devoted, which means we make God the ideal, that which we aspire for, and we move towards that through life, finding Him in and through everything. All experiences, no matter what they are, work, family, everything else, are the means. They are not an end, because remember, they are in the face of change. And if you make them an end, and we do that by associating our happiness with them, when they change, there'll be bereavement. And even when there's an indication of change, there will be fear. And fear always boils into anger. Fear is the seed of anger. And ignorance is a seed of fear. So you have to break out of the circle. And to explain this, one has to go back into the pages of the Katha Upanishad. So let us traverse back once again from the Gita to the Katha Upanishad and bring back to minds the wise words of Nachiketas, the seeker, when he was tempted by Yama, the lord of death, to understand his logic and way of seeing things, so that we may have the same discerning wisdom. Because what good is wisdom if it doesn't protect us? What good is wisdom if it doesn't act? It is just another burden. When Yama tempted Nachiketas, or Nachiketas was tempted, this was his logic. And if we develop a way of living by which we can see with similar wisdom, we will know how to guide ourselves through the choppy waters to the other shore. These things last till tomorrow, the ephemeral, O death. They wear out the vigor of the senses. Even the longest life is verily short. Keep thou thy chariots, the dance and music. No man can be made happy with wealth. If we should obtain wealth and behold thee, we should only live as long as thou shalt sway. Only that boon which I have chosen is fit to be longed by me. What decaying mortal in this world
below and possessed of knowledge, after having approached the company of the undecaying and the immortal, will rejoice in a long life after he has pondered over the nature of the pleasures produced by song and sport, which is beauty and love. And Nachiketa says, O death, tell us that in which men have this doubt, and which is about the great hereafter. Nachiketa does not choose any other boon but that concerning the soul of which the knowledge is hidden. There are about 6 strong arguments or reasons that Nachiketa puts forth to Yama why he does not accept all the temptations, which included lordship of the earth, of all the worlds, and pleasures that are not even found in the heavens, that even the celestials don't enjoy. What would you do, my friend, if you were given a boon like that? Well, you don't have to answer me. Think for yourself. Go for it. Knowing that all these things are impermanent. So these are the 6. 1. These things last till tomorrow. All things are in the process of change. If that wisdom has not entered your heart, that everything that you can see sensorily is in the process of change. Pursuit number 2. Pursuing them or enjoying them wears out the vigor of the senses and drains your energy. Number 3. Even the longest life is short because it all comes to an end. Number 4. No man can be made happy by wealth. Number 5. Even if he should obtain all the wealth, but you are there, we would only live as long as you say we can. Number 6. What decaying mortal like me, like Nachiketas, who is possessed of limited knowledge, after having approached someone who is immortal, will ask for anything less than the secret to immortality? Now that I have met you, O Yama, who are immortal, and I am mortal, why would I ask for anything less? Why would I settle for anything less? So these 6 things Nachiketas quickly pointed out to Yama is the reason why I have turned down all these things. Yama was greatly impressed. These allurements are called the pleasant or prayas in the language of the Kathopanishad. And what is good is called shreyas. Nachiketas rejects all the pleasures of the world, having considered their true value or worth, and also what is in his best interest. Do we have that embedded in our heart? Do we look at all things and consider their true worth, and also what is in our best interest? Do you know what is in your best interest, your highest interest? Not your best interest in each situation, but your best interest, period. And that period means it underlies every situation, no matter what it may be. Do we consider things this way? There is a Nachiketas element in each one of us, but we have to go beyond the grip of the pleasant, which is not only hollow, but riddled with sorrow. It is up to each one to consider if it is about time to reverse this and to take charge of our lives and thereby our destiny. The question before us is just how we bring about this miracle of focus, ultimate focus, and also the ability to focus on things that need to be done. Is it possible to have an ultimate focus that guides all of our other focuses? And the secret is given to us in this verse. Whatever thou doest, whatever thou eatest,
whatever thou offerest in sacrifice, whatever thou givest, whatever thou practicest as austerity, O Arjuna, do it as an offering unto me. Do everything to God indwelling and not the person or the form that appears in front of you. This verse perfectly blends life as duty and life as worship into a formula for life. However, one cannot just do, offer, give, and practice with words. We have to be ready to back up the feeling with all and everything we have been allowed or endowed with. Just saying, "I offer all this unto you, O God," will not do. There must be a feeling of satisfaction that all was indeed offered. Let us look at just one simple example among the words used and use giving among the different ways that are listed. When you give someone something, you must give good things, things that you yourself would be very pleased to have, things that would make the other person happy as you would like to feel yourself, perhaps more than you would allow yourself, your kith and kin and family. You must feel that it is a gift given to God through them. And this will take out the hypocrisy in giving. People get the cheapest deals that they can, package it in the least expensive, but appearing rich or presentable ways and call that a gift. All the way, there is slyness and cunningness in their heart. When you give a gift with cunningness and slyness in your heart, there is deception. Deception will not please others and it will not please you. It will not please you because you know in your heart that this whole thing is wrapped up in deception. Now, it is another thing if that's the best thing that you can afford. But if you can afford better and you do allow yourself and your kith and kin and family better and you give otherwise, it is nothing but deception. So in that spirit we are told, whatever thou doest, do unto me, as if it is an offering unto me. Which means that everything has to be done with all our heart. Not just, well, this is work or this is something, so I do it. It's a paycheck. And then I go home and I do the things that really matter, which is the family. That individual is highly confused and deluded. Whatever thou eatest, and eatest not just in terms of food. But the Upanishad calls food ahar, or anything that is taken in through any of the apertures of the body. That means even hear the good, see the good, things of that nature. Whatever thou offerest in sacrifice. Sacrifice not just in the ritual, but when you sacrifice, that is, you put others before you, do it as an offering unto me. When you give gifts as an offering unto me, when you practice austerity, which is self-discipline, do it so that you are denying the lower for the higher or me. And therefore, Krishna says, O Arjuna, live as an offering unto me. All the other things are vistas or avenues or fields of action. God, Self, Atma, Truth, Brahman, Bhagwan, call it by any name you want. True nature, self nature, that is the only goal. And if we have that focus, we will be fine. Now we just spoke about the hypocrisy in giving, and this specific thing is mentioned in another chapter. We've been going back and forth from the Gita to the Katha Upanishad. And it's time to go back over there to see where this is mentioned clearly. This is precisely what is pointed out in the second and third verse of the first chapter of the Katha Upanishad. In the Katha Upanishad, the father of Nachiketas, Vajrasrava, was performing a sacrifice, a huge sacrifice or ceremony, in which he had to give everything that was dear for attainments that were higher in this life and in the next. When the presents were being distributed, filial anxiety about the welfare of his father entered into the heart of Nachiketas, who was still a boy, and he thought, "Joyless verily are those worlds to which a man goes by giving presents and sacrifice, cows which have drunk water, eaten grass, given their milk, and are barren." In those days, cattle was wealth. So, giving cattle was giving wealth. Today, it is slightly different. But in those days, cattle being wealth, Nachiketas' father thought a little of what we would call selfishly. He chose instead to give away the poorest among his cows, which were actually more a liability under the guise of giving, and to keep the other ones for himself, so he could have the best till the promised land came, and when the promised land came, it came at a bargain price. Nachiketas observed this, and he felt that this was not giving, and he remembered the scriptures say that those who give what is joyless invite joyless conditions upon themselves for a long time. Being a very good and dutiful son, he did not critique or criticize his father, but he offered himself as a solution, as a part of the giving, or what was to be given away, because his father considered him very dear, so that his father's hope would be fulfilled. Such beauty, such clarity, and such insight. And Nachiketas was still a boy, we are told. But my friends, what do you feel when you listen to things like this? If your heart and soul feel that this better way of living must be adopted now, very good. It is in your best interest only. We now move to the third topic for the day, thought at death. To make the last thought a complete thought of God, we must live in the spirit of that last thought every single day. The last thought is not one among many thoughts, but a cumulative thought which comes naturally to one who has walked the path sincerely. "And whosoever, leaving the body, goes forth, remembering me alone at the time of death, he attains my being." There is no doubt about this. With the mind not moving towards any other thing, made steadfast by the method of habitual meditation, and constantly meditating on the divine, one goes to the Supreme Person, the resplendent, O Arjuna. Uttering the one-syllabled Om, the Brahman, and remembering me, he who departs, leaving the body, attains to the supreme goal. Again we hear the words, "goes forth with the condition, remembering me alone." Me alone is a fruit of a life lived practicing the presence of God. A cumulative thought, with the mind not moving towards anything else. And how does one attain that? Once again, we mentioned earlier that Krishna's way or the Gita way of talking is where the sentences, in one sentence or in two sentences or verses, you would see the condition and then you would see the means. Mind not moving towards any other thing. How? Made steadfast by the method of habitual meditation. This habitual meditation is not just the sitting meditation or dhyana, but also meditation which means fixed on me, abiding in me, constantly meditating on the divine. So unless we have God as the goal and life as the means, this constant meditating on the divine is not going to happen. And if it is, it becomes very easy at the last breath to utter the one syllable Om, not just as a word, because that is not going to take you any place. But he says very clearly, remembering me, he who departs, leaving the body, attains to the supreme goal. This remembering is not a sort of remembering that we do, okay, I've lived a life of eat, drink, and be merry, and now I'll do the God thing and cash in on that chip. So I've had a life of merrymaking and do that. The things that are closest to your heart are going to be on your mind, in your mind, and in your heart when it becomes time to leave. They will burst forth from the subconscious onto your conscious mind without you being able to do anything about it, even if you try to consciously remember God or have the God thought. And so we must have a clear focus. Goes forth remembering Om is not just a mantra, but completely fused with the feeling of what the mantra points into, whole being, wholeheartedly. We see these words again and again and again. This whole feeling is difficult because there are very few things we do wholeheartedly in this world. Our mind is always distracted, especially today, if there is no stick or carrot or personal gain. This is why, my friends, it is so very important to do everything we do, including our chores and the mundane, wholeheartedly, without distraction or any personal gain, or to put it simply, life as duty. We now move to the fourth topic of today, jnana or supreme wisdom. Jnana or wisdom is not what we know or how much we know. To the Gita, to the Upanishads, to the Yoga Vashishta, to the Brahma Sutras, knowing and being are one. How we live is what we know. All else is hypocrisy and deception. These verses are very thrilling and inspiring. They offer hope, assurance, and encouragement to stay on the path of the good for our own highest good. When thy intellect, perplexed by what thou hast heard, shall stand immovable and steady in the self, then thou shalt attain self-realization. That state, which is night to all beings, to the self-controlled man, is wakefulness. When all beings are awake, that is night for the sage who seeks. He attains to peace, into whom all desires enter, as water enters the ocean, which filled from all sides remains unmoved, but not the man who is full of desires. For that man who rejoices only in the self, who is satisfied with the self, and who is content in the self alone, verily, there is nothing to do. Friends, how do you feel on hearing all this? Forget the words. What pivot or change has come about you as the result of hearing all this? See, Arjuna heard this discourse, and we are Arjuna. He was in the process of indecision. We've already gone over that earlier. And hearing these words, there was an instant change in him that I shall do as you bid. In other words, as he has been taught. We are also being taught. It may be that you're hearing it from this voice. It may be that it's coming across YouTube or the website or the video or an audio. But you are also being told the same message or given the same message, just as Arjuna had. Is there any change within as you hear these words? That is the condition of alertness which we have to listen. In these verses, the first two verses have an if clause. In other words, if you are perplexed by what thou hast heard, in other words, what you have heard takes what you have known or believed in the past and dismisses it. And you are ready to abide in the self. You are ready to move towards that state of wakefulness, which is night to all beings who are self-controlled, and things that the world doesn't go after are the things that become more important to you, the higher things. If these things have happened within you, then, and here comes the then clause, one attains to peace, because desires leave you when you no longer pursue them. When you no longer pursue desires, desires leave you. If you want to get rid of suspicion, fear, anger, the object of anger, including the whole process of anger, has to be abandoned. When you abandon it, why would those thoughts arise in you? Now, how do you abandon it? By embracing something else in its place. Something better, a nobler, a better way. So he attains peace, whom all desires enter as the waters in the ocean, because what you desire is the truth of your own self, but not the man who is full of desires. That one who rejoices in the self, satisfied with the self, content with the self, there is verily nothing to do. This verily nothing to do does not mean that we can hang up our coat and hat and pass time and go do whatever dilly-dally. But it means that our work and actions are no longer driven by external factors anymore. Usually, an unexamined mind or an unexamined cycle guides our grinding in life. We work so we have to eat, and we eat so we have to work. But you discover a new way where you still do what needs to be done. Whether you is not that important, and what needs to be done simply happens. How and why? Because you are one with the wider fabric of life, and you do your part as duty to the whole, from which you do not stand apart. He whose undertakings are all devoid of desires and selfish purposes, and whose actions have been burnt by the fire of knowledge, him the wise called a sage. A sage is not one that has memorized all the scriptures or knows all the techniques or whatever else. Devoid of desires, devoid of selfish purposes, whose actions have been burnt by the fire of knowledge. Mark these words carefully, my friends. When one's undertakings are all devoid of desires and selfish purposes, then only can we see things as they are and do what needs to be done, which is the right thing. This is because there is no in my best interest anymore or anywhere in the equation. The more one practices unselfishness, the more is selfishness squeezed out of the system, and one universalizes one's existence. The vision that we have when we stand together with all inseparably is called wisdom, and the person is called a sage. Superior is wisdom sacrifice to the sacrifice with objects. All actions in their entirety, O Arjuna, culminate in knowledge. Wisdom sacrifice is called Jnana Yajna, and is not limited to a time when we come together as we are today, but a continual offering of all our limited ways of thinking into the fire of vigilance. Wisdom blossoms when we let go of ignorance. Even if thou art the most sinful of all sinners, Yet thou shalt verily cross over the sins by the raft of knowledge. As the blazing fire reduces fuel to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge reduce all actions to ashes. Verily, there is no purifier in this world like knowledge. He who is perfected in yoga finds it in himself in time. These three verses assure us that the past can never disallow a future if we seize the present and put forth self-effort. Knowledge, again, is not about knowing as such, but by direct insight into the truth of things or intuition. It may take time, it may take lives, but why does this matter at all anyway? The purpose of work is to be worked on, and therefore we are told action as sacrifice. Inaction, what is sacrifice, is our lower nature, and the action itself becomes a mean to do things in such a way as an offering to God, and therefore disallow any thoughts of selfishness or self-centeredness to come in. The Katha Upanishad therefore extols the way of knowledge or Jnana Yoga not in terms of accumulating scriptural or textual knowledge, but knowledge which comes about as an insight into the nature of things, which requires us to be alert, alive, and fully engaged in life, choosing the better or the Shreyas or the good at every step along the way. The Lord takes neither the demerit or even the merit of any. Knowledge is enveloped by ignorance, therefore beings are deluded. But to those whose ignorance is destroyed by the knowledge of the self, like the sun, knowledge reveals the Supreme Brahman. We are told very early, knowledge is enveloped by ignorance, therefore beings are deluded. No one is a perpetual sinner. Every saint has a past, and every sinner has a future. Sins are nothing but mistakes caused by ignorance, and therefore beings are deluded. We must and can undo this. Your only duty is to remove and destroy ignorance. This is why we have every situation in our life, no other reason. But some choose to ignore all of this because of their attachments and identification, and that limits them or eludes them. God is not responsible for individuals or collective conditions that exist, and conditions don't bind one from exceeding them. Just how are you bound and by whom? Let the conditions be what they are and what they may. Let this body also age naturally. The question is, what is going on within? And if there is inner expansion, growth and ascent. Krishna points out, ignorance is destroyed by knowledge of the self. Direct knowledge of the self requires living as a seeker or one who seeks the truth. It does not matter what conditions we find ourselves in and through it. We can each still live with knowledge of the self being the supreme goal. Friends, we now come to the fifth or last topic for this evening. These last verses that are contained in this fifth topic, Way to Peace, sum up most of what we have covered so far. A virtual summary of the essential teachings of the Gita and or a quick guide to spiritual living. The man attains peace who, abandoning all desires, moves about without longing. without the sense of mind or possessiveness, and without egoism. This is the seat of Brahman, O Arjuna. Attaining to this, none is deluded. Being established therein, even at the end of life, one attains to oneness with Brahman. The man who is full of faith, who is devoted to it, and who has subdued the senses, obtains knowledge. And having obtained knowledge, he goes at once to the Supreme Peace. But renunciation, O Arjuna, is hard to attain without yoga. The yoga harmonized sage quickly goes to Brahman. He who is happy within, who rejoices within, who is illuminated within, that yogi attains absolute freedom or moksha, himself becoming Brahman. Peace is the absence of desire, not fulfilling desire, and it is the same as happiness. Happiness is the absence of desire, the absence of wanting, not fulfilling your wants. But for the most part, this is what we see, fulfilling our desires, fulfilling our wants. And whenever we try to fulfill things that are in time process, that come about, they must also undo and go away. And when they go away, or when there is a possibility of it going away, or it's an inkling in our soul that things may change, there is fear. The mind starts planning on how to keep things status quo. How can that mind know peace at all? How can that mind know joy at all? And so Krishna is very, very clear. That man attains peace who, abandoning all desires, moves about without longing. Bring back to your mind that word homelessness is at home everywhere. Everything is okay without the sense of mind. My okay does not depend upon things outside. I am okay within. It doesn't matter how things are. That is how things are. This is who I am. What is the relationship between the two? Nothing but a construct of confusion. Nothing but a construct of delusion. That is how things are. This is who I am. There is a who and there is a what. What is in time process? Who is not in time process? But when who gets linked to the what, my happiness depends on those things, whether it be family or whatever. Friends, not a good recipe, because all of that is in the process of change. This is why we worry, because something within us tells us it may not be that way. And so we work hard, we plan on how to keep things a certain way, because that way promotes our happiness. And this is the selfishness even in the closest of relationships. Krishna says, this is the seat of Brahman, attaining to this. And what is the this? Abandoning all desires, moving without longing, without the sense of I, me and mine, and without egoism. That is the seat of Brahman. Not worshipping something in terms of deity or whatever. Attaining to this, none is deluded. This verse follows right after that. Both these verses are from the second chapter. The first verse is the 71st verse. This is the 72nd verse. It comes right after that when he talks about what the seat of Brahman is. The seat of Brahman comes about naturally, abandoning all desires, moving about, which is living, interacting, working, doing everything, without any longing, without any sense of mind or possessiveness, without any egoism. There is no delusion. Even if this is accomplished at the end of life, one's life, one attains to Brahma. Now we have given a little bit of clarity of how to help bring about this condition. As we mentioned, the Yoga Gita is also a yoga shastra, which is a scripture of yoga. And so it says, the man who is full of faith and devoted to it. We have talked earlier that faith is very different from belief. Faith is accepting something from a very reliable source and then working to actualize it in ourselves. Belief is the buck stops there and we repeat it again and again that the bus will come, but no bus comes to the bus stop and we are always just standing there and hungry. Devoted to it. To be devoted to it, we have talked about what devotion means, to give ourselves wholeheartedly to something. Subdued the senses, obtains knowledge. This knowledge cannot come about unless these three conditions come about. Full of faith, devoted to it, and subdued the senses. It is only with those three that we can understand what knowledge or insight or intuition is. You cannot have intuition, you cannot have insight, if there is a lacking over here. And if you have faith in the things of the world, whether it be money, power, relationships, whatever it may be, or there is devotion to that, or if the senses still clamor for this, that, and the other, there can be no peace, and there can be no knowledge or intuition, and there can be no attainment of the higher. So this is what has to be renounced. The opposite of faith, the opposite of devotion to it, which is devotion to all the things in the world, and pursuit of pleasure. This renunciation is hard to attain without yoga. This yoga is not going to a yoga class and doing some asanas on a little mat with a little water bottle. But the yoga we are talking about is a union, a devotion continually with God. The yoga we are talking about is what we have just talked about. Full of faith, devoted to it, subdued the senses, and a couple things we've talked about earlier, abandoning all desires, moving about without longing, without the sense of mind or possessiveness, and without egoism. That is the hallmark of the Bhagavad Gita's yoga or Krishna's yoga. And Krishna calls one who has this makeup, the yoga harmonized sage, and assures us that he quickly goes to Brahma because he is happy within. He rejoices within. See, yoga is not denial and misery and a state of austerity where we mortify, but we are not pulled to the little things of the world because there is something else that delights us immensely. There is joy. There is immense joy because that which we pursue is non-changing. It is the truth and the source and the sustenance and the support of our own life. And we can never be separated from it. And therefore there is happiness and joy. Because you have something that will never change and never leave you. It will only get bigger and only get brighter. So there is no fear, no planning, no procrastination, no desperation, no confusion. Happy within. Rejoices within, illuminated within. That yogi attains freedom or moksha. Not a depressed yogi. Swami Shivananda used to call depressed yogis as castroy face or Sunday face. Those people don't go anywhere. It's not the same as a jovial and externally extroverted yogi, but one who is happy within, who rejoices within, who is illuminated within. That yogi attains absolute freedom or moksha, himself becoming Brahma. He who knows me as the enjoyer of sacrifices and austerities, the great Lord of all the worlds and the friend of all beings, attains to peace. Thus, always keeping the mind balanced, the yogi with the mind controlled attains to peace, abiding in me, which culminates in liberation. Supreme bliss verily comes to this yogi whose mind is quite peaceful, whose passion is quietened, who has become Brahman, and who is free from sin. When a man sees the whole variety of beings as resting in the one, and spreading forth from that alone, he then becomes Brahman. And he who serves me with unswerving devotion, he crosses beyond the qualities and is fit for becoming Brahman. These verses, my friends, are from different chapters, but they have all been arranged very beautifully, and these verses in itself form a mini Bhagavad Gita that one can read a couple times a day. He who knows me is the enjoyer of all sacrifices and austerities, so it is pointless to want anything. Thus, keeping the mind balanced, the yogi with the mind controlled attains to peace. These two words, balance, what is balance? Balance is when there are conditions, whether they are this way or that way, there is no movement in the mind. And if there is a movement in the mind, consciousness is not moved. Consciousness or the sense of being or self does not move. And therefore the mind is controlled. Controlled doesn't mean that there is no oscillation. There may be oscillation in the mind. There may be a feeling that arises as a reaction, but there is no identification with that. And therefore, there is no movement in the sense of being, and there is peace. We are told later that supreme bliss verily comes to this yogi. To who? To one whose mind is quite peaceful. And how does it become peaceful? Whose passion is quietened. And how does our passion become quietened? Because he finds something in self that is more fulfilling. And what is that? He is happy within. We have discussed this earlier. He rejoices within. He is illuminated within. When a man sees all the variety as resting in that one, so my friends, his otherness must be cast out completely. And this is what we are told in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad also by the great sage Yajnavalkya. Dvatiyam bhayam bhavati. Whenever there is other, there is fear. And when there is unity, when there is oneness, when there is peace, when there is no movement, there is peace. And lastly, we are told, he who serves me with unswerving devotion. And what does this serve me? Does that mean that we end our life? No, my friends. We have been talking about just all this, and we can sum it up in three words. Life as duty. Fly unto him for refuge with all thy being, O Arjuna. By his grace thou shalt obtain supreme peace and the eternal abode. The path is difficult not only because of its ups and downs and rough terrain, but because the instrument or vehicle for travel, which is our own self, has to be made while traveling. The self is the means by which the self has to be known. The self that is enmeshed or entangled in unhealthy ways of living has to be lifted up by the self only and given a good direction. The Bhagavad Gita does not talk about the Guru much except in two places. And here probably points to it a little towards the end of the last chapter, where Krishna gives good counsel to Arjuna. Fly unto him for refuge with all thy being. The Guru, having already trodden the path, or be one who is steady on the path, knows where the pitfalls lie, and there are many. Wherever there is Krishna, the Lord of Yoga, wherever there is Arjuna the archer, there are prosperity, victory, happiness, and firm policy. Such is my conviction. This last verse of the Bhagavad Gita is Sanjaya, the charioteer's declaration. He was the charioteer of the blind king Dhritarashtra, whose sons pushed this war. Krishna gifted Sanjaya with divine vision, whereby he could see the entire battle in every detail as it unfolded and relay it to the blind king. We too are tied up or blinded by so many entanglements, and Krishna's message is still relayed to us by different means as it was when it was first given. The Bhagavad Gita is an eternal message for all who seek the highest good, peace, and happiness that endures. In this last verse, we are told by Sanjaya, the charioteer of the blind king, wherever there is Krishna, the Lord of Yoga, wherever there is Arjuna, the archer, there are prosperity, victory, happiness, and firm policy. Such is my conviction. Krishna is not just the personality of Krishna, but all that Krishna represented, and this is the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. If this song of God becomes a song of the soul, we are assured that there are prosperity, victory, happiness, and firm policy. But we have a little proviso here. You have to be Arjuna. You have to be willing to fight. So Krishna, the Lord of Yoga, as our guide, the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita are Krishna. And we are ready to do or act in accordance with the wisdom. Then prosperity, victory, happiness, and firm policy is assured. Friends, we've talked about quite a few things in our time together today. We started with the body and world I have innocent, and how pursuing things that are in time process is a sure recipe for sorrow and suffering. Then what do? We aspire for the Supreme alone and make everything else or accept everything else to be the means to that one goal. If we are able to do that, we would be constantly practicing the presence of God, the remembrance of God, and the thought at death or the cumulative thought would be of the Supreme alone. And we are sure that if that is in fact the case, then there is no concern about returning back to the cycle of samsara. Jnana or supreme wisdom is extolled, and we are told that people are deluded because of ignorance, not because of anything else. And all suffering that we experience, no matter what it may be, results from that ignorance. And no one is condemned forever or condemned at all. Beings are deluded because of ignorance. And acting in delusion is what brings suffering. Acting in wisdom is the way out. And lastly, we are given this way out in the way to peace, which I mentioned is the little Bhagavad Gita in and of itself. And if we can read just that fifth portion every day, and imbibe that in our hearts, we will be blessed. Friends, thank you for joining me today. It's been a long session. To download this video, audio, or PDF summary, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.